Welcome to the Israel Daily News Podcast. I'm your host, Shanna Fold, and I'm here to get you caught up quickly. I've got some top news stories for you today from Israel, and guess what? You're listening, so you're already on top of your game. Survive and thrive, people. Knowledge is the best weapon. Today is Monday, May 6th, 2024 in the Gregorian calendar, and the 28th of Nisan, 5784 in the Hebrew calendar. In the first half of today's show, we'll give over some news, and in the second half, we'll go through all the Holocaust remembrance materials and stories of the day. That's Yom HaShoah, Israel's Holocaust Commemoration Day. Now, let's get to the news. The Israeli War Cabinet unanimously approved an IDF, or Israel Defense Force, operation in Rafah, which is southern Gaza. The IDF has started evacuating civilians from eastern Rafah to a newly expanded humanitarian zone in anticipation of the operation. Egypt has closed the Rafah crossing as a response. Defense Minister Yoav Gallant emphasized the necessity of the operation following unsuccessful negotiations for a ceasefire and the release of hostages. Lots of rumors are circulating about a potential ceasefire deal with Hamas. Not long after the Rafah operation was approved, Hamas came out with a statement saying it agreed to a ceasefire proposal by Egypt and Qatar. Per our sources, it would appear that the deal was an old one that Israel did not agree to, and Hamas is now attempting to create pressure on Israel and change the public narrative to a story that would make it look like Israel is simply not agreeing to any deal at all. A significant event was reported involving a drone attack from Hezbollah, which resulted in deaths near the northern Israeli city of Metula. This drone, reportedly loaded with explosives, struck near a northern community, causing critical injuries and maybe even fatalities. There are no further details for the public at this time. We'll be back with you to confirm if this information is true. Those news bites you just heard were powered by our partner, Bernie News Network, or BNN. For fast and precise updates, you can join BNN on WhatsApp and Telegram by going over to their site, bernie.news. Four Israeli soldiers have been killed in a Hamas rocket barrage Sunday afternoon, which was responsible for firing 10 rockets toward the Kerem Shalom area along the Israel-Gaza border. In addition to the four IDF soldiers pronounced dead, several others were injured. The soldiers killed were identified as Staff Sergeant Reuben Mark Mordechai Asulin, Staff Sergeant Ido Testa, Staff Sergeant Tal Shavit, and Sergeant Michael Ruzel. Following the attack, Soroka Medical Center received 10 wounded individuals, three of them in serious condition. The IDF closed the Kerem Shalom crossing, a vital entry point for humanitarian aid in response to this attack. The Kerem Shalom border crossing exists at the southern Gaza Strip. Israeli airstrikes targeted Hamas command centers and rocket launch sites in Rafah following this attack on Sunday. President Isaac Herzog condemned Hamas for obstructing humanitarian aid and called for international action against the group. The Israeli government unanimously voted to shut down Al Jazeera's operations in Israel due to security concerns related to the Israel-Hamas war. Al Jazeera is a Qatari news outlet sponsored by Qatar. This decision, subject to recertification every 45 days, involves closing Al Jazeera's broadcasts in Arabic and English, its Israeli offices, seizing broadcasting equipment, and restricting access to its websites. The move came into effect immediately with an executive order signed by Communications Minister Shlomo Kari. Prime Minister Netanyahu accused Al Jazeera correspondents of harming Israel's security and inciting against IDF soldiers, while Kari emphasized his stance of zero tolerance for those using press freedom to harm Israel's security. I want to thank all of you for your interest in Israeli affairs, Israeli politics, our world politics. I also want to thank all of you who personally finance and fund the Israel Daily News podcast with monthly contributions. You can support us by going over to our new website, israeldailynews.org. Our organization is operational thanks to listeners and supporters like you. In response for your contributions, I'll send over a handwritten thank you note to show my appreciation. Just make sure that you send me a note at info@israeldailynews.org or at shannafold@gmail.com so that I can get your billing details and send you out a thank you note. I would be more than happy to do that, and I just put some in the mail. You can also support us by leaving us a review on Apple Podcasts. 2, you can share the show with a friend. And 3, you can follow us on Facebook and Instagram at israeldaily.news, as well as Shanna Fold. My name has 2 N's in it, and I'm very sensitive about that. You can find us on Twitter at Israel Podcast. Israel commemorated the Holocaust Sunday night into Monday night, May 5th to May 6th, with the annual celebration called Yom HaShoah, that is Holocaust Remembrance Day in Hebrew. There is an international one on January 27th that you might be familiar with, and then Israel has one every May 5th. That's what we're observing now. In Jerusalem, Prime Minister Netanyahu addressed the crowd at Yad Vashem, Israel's World Holocaust Remembrance Center. Take a listen to an excerpt of his speech, which I am sure was very meaningful this year to so many people following October 7th, the most heinous and largest assault and massacre against Jews since the Holocaust. It has not even been 100 years. Israel's President Herzog spoke as well, and there was a full program over at Yad Vashem in Jerusalem.
80 years ago, in the Holocaust, the Jewish people were totally defenseless against those who sought our destruction. No nation came to our aid. Today, we again confront enemies bent on our destruction. I say to the leaders of the world, no amount of pressure, no decision by any international forum will stop Israel from defending itself. As the Prime Minister of Israel, the one and only Jewish state, I pledge here today from Jerusalem on this Holocaust Remembrance Day. If Israel is forced to stand alone, Israel will stand alone. But we know we are not alone because countless decent people around the world support our just cause. And I say to you, we will defeat our genocidal enemies. Never again is now.
Here in Tel Aviv, Israel Daily News CEO and host Shanna Fold, that's yours truly, was called upon to light a candle and read a poem by Abba Kovner called Yizkor, which translates to We Shall Remember. Kovner was a revolutionary character in Jewish history who planned a number of uprisings during the Holocaust, stood by the Jewish people through Europe, and then went on to move to the new state of Israel. And he became a poet and writer once here. The event was organized by Adopt a Safta, which translates to Adopt a Grandmother. That organization had more than 1,000 internationals and Israelis turn up for a large English language program. It included a Holocaust survivor testimony, which was very moving. I'll tell you a bit about Avraham Roet, who spoke for upwards of an hour without so much as taking a breath. The man is 96 years old and a Holocaust survivor from Holland. He shared his life story with us. It was disturbing, yet resilient. Roet lived in ghettos in Holland while Dutch officials opened the country to Germans and freely offered up the names and home addresses of the Jews in the 1930s living in Holland. Rouet wanted to make it known that the Dutch officers were very willing and happy to open up roadways, bridges, and offices to German Nazi officials to come in and take over and collaborate. Rouet's family home was approached by officers one night, and his mother was able to temporarily scare them off, telling them that her children had typhus. However, his sisters and his grandparent, who was staying in the apartment next door, were taken to the camps and killed. His grandparent was killed that night, and one of his sisters died from typhus, which she actually got after her liberation from a labor camp. Rouet and his brothers survived by moving from house to house, living with Christian families that took them in, and he referenced a pastor that he remembered that had been telling his congregation that they needed to support the Jewish people. And because of his influence, many families from the Christian community saved and rescued Jews. Tears came to his eyes when he spoke specifically about his boat docking in the Haifa port in what was then British Palestine. He said he felt that he had a new life and a new opportunity. And I saw his eyes welling up with tears after all the difficult stuff that he talked about his sisters being killed and his grandfather being killed. Rouet became one of the first IDF soldiers in Israel after he made it. He worked at Osam, which is a major food production company from Israel, a film production house in Haifa, which he became the manager of. And he later on decided he didn't want any bosses anymore, and he opened four businesses. He says that he opened one for each of his sons, and two of his sons operate them today. He had four sons. At the end of his talk, a man by the name of Johnny Daniels from an organization called From the Depths revealed a Torah scroll that had been held by a Christian family for some 70 years in Poland. He pulled it out at the end of the program. It was incredibly moving. Rouet penned a single letter, a Hebrew letter, using a feather quill, and he told everyone that he had written a kuf for kehillah, which is a Hebrew word that means community. He dedicated his letter to all the young olim, or new immigrants, in the room. Toward the end of the program, Rabbi Shlomo Chayan, who was leading the service, asked people to stand and shout the names of their loved ones who perished in the Holocaust. There were too many names for everyone in the room to have a chance to say the name of their loved one, whether it be a grandparent or a great-grandparent, or even some people, their parents. This was extremely shocking and moving to look around and realize just how many people have a direct relative who was killed in the Holocaust, and all of them were standing, and they live on in the state of Israel. Rabbi Chayan said there's three deaths. The first time you learn what death is, which is usually when you're a child or an adolescent, the day you die, and the last time someone ever utters your name. This was extremely emotional for me to come to understand, and I contemplated it while I was seated in the audience, and I understood why people want to leave behind a legacy, and we can honor the legacy of our family and friends who died in the Holocaust just simply by speaking about them, by talking their name, by putting their name into existence using just our mouths. No one said that the truth was easy, but that is the truth, and it left a large impact on me. Now I would like to read an excerpt from a letter that the chairman of Yad Vashem sent to me personally. He wanted me to read it. Now, I met Danny Dayan back when he was the Consul General of Israel in New York. We were both living in New York at the time. He was there on his mission to be the Consul General, and I was born and raised in New York. He penned a direct letter to the president of Columbia University to ask her to take on a position of leadership while her Ivy League institution continues to exist as a site of massive pro-Palestine and anti-Israel protest on a campus that has been uncaring and outright anti-Semitic to its Jewish student population, some of whom have reported not being able to go to class, being asked to take their classes online, or even being prevented from walking through campus or being assaulted by protesters who have assembled tents as a means of protest on campus. Now, this is not just happening in Columbia University. It's happening all throughout the United States, even at the smaller universities that you don't expect. Even I got some reports from people that the state universities, which don't usually get as affected by these types of protests, are now seeing tent installations on their campuses as well. I'm going to read you the letter that he wrote. I thought it was profound. Dr. Shafiq, President, Columbia University. Dear President Shafiq, I write to you in several capacities as chairman of Yad Vashem, the flagship institution of Holocaust remembrance, as a former consul general of Israel to New York, a position in which I collaborated frequently with your predecessor, and last but not least, as the proud father of a Columbia alum, General Studies 2021, and the School of International and Public Affairs 2022 graduate. Madam President, the presidency of Columbia University is one of the most important leadership positions in the academic world. The president of Columbia is not, as sometimes erroneously referred, an administrator. He or she is chosen to be a leader. All the decisions you recently made were administrative in nature. To call the NYPD to evacuate the illegal encampment, to allow its reestablishment, to activate or deactivate credentials, to move to online teaching. Even your decision to negotiate is administrative in nature. Madam, the time requires leadership decisions. Your illustrious career brought you to the presidency of Columbia not to be a CEO or a crisis manager, but to lead academically, and even more important, to lead morally. President Shafiq, when thousands of Columbia faculty, staff, and students call for the elimination of the State of Israel and the abolition of Zionism, you must take a stand. Not a political stand, a moral stand. When it becomes crystal clear that abolishing the existence of the Jewish state is a prevalent ideology in Columbia, the president of the institution cannot remain silent. The Talmud teaches us, silence is admission. Silence inevitably will be interpreted as tolerance, or even worse, consent. Your decision to deal only with the behavior or the manners of the demonstrators is not sustainable. A polite KKK member is as despicable and probably more dangerous than a thuggish one. A moral leader will fight both with the same determination. Madam President, time has come for you to take a stand. Can the promotion of the elimination of Israel, with or without genocide of its Jewish population, be a legitimate cause advanced in academic syllabi, lectures, events, demonstrations, and encampments in Columbia University? Or, like apartheid, misogyny, homophobia, white supremacism, is so despicable that it will not be tolerated? Each day, each hour you evade making a public decision of this nature and acting accordingly, you actually decide affirmatively. There is a naive belief that academy is immune to bigotry, and the causes that students and professors lead are inherently good causes, even if sometimes ahead of their time. Nothing is further from the truth. Heidelberg University in Germany was not less prestigious than Columbia. In the 1920s, it was a center of liberal thinking. A decade later, a mob of Heidelberg students burned Jewish and other, quote, corrupt books. The Jewish people was dispersed for two millennia, subject to persecutions, forced conversions, discrimination, pogroms, and finally the extermination of 6 million Jews in the Holocaust. We returned to our ancestral homeland. Pursuing the destruction and erasure of the Jewish state is not less abominable than racial laws. Will Columbia be remembered as Heidelberg? To a very large extent, it is up to you, Madame. Madame President Elie Wiesel, the Holocaust survivor and Nobel Peace Laureate, defined indifference as, quote, the most insidious danger of all. And the great civil right leader and fellow Nobelist Rev. Martin Luther King Jr. added that, quote, the hottest place in hell is reserved for those who remain neutral in times of great moral conflict, end quote. A great moral conflict was delivered to your doorsteps. Rise to the occasion. Lead with moral principles, not only with administrative regulations. Speak up. Sincerely, Danny Dayan, Chairman. Well, what did you think of that? Leave us a comment or send us an email. I'd like to leave us off with a somber yet hopeful story about a young Israeli pop star who's been putting a smile on so many Israeli faces. Israeli Eurovision contestant Eden Golan.
Every day I'm losing my mind, holding on in this mysterious ride, dancing in the storm. I got nothing to hide. Take it.
She's making her nation proud yet again by having chosen to forego the Eurovision opening gala in order to attend a Holocaust Remembrance Day ceremony in Malmo, Sweden. That's where the competition is being held this year. It is a very charged city and has gone from being a Jewish community to being a highly Muslim and a highly anti-Semitic community, from what I have been told. Alongside Malmo's current Jewish community, she's commemorated the Holocaust victims and those affected by recent tragic events, including the October 7th attack in Israel. Golan sees her participation in Eurovision as a mission to represent Israel, especially poignant amid ongoing conflicts. She says she's committed to never forgetting the past and to advocating for peace. Despite controversy around Israel's participation in the Eurovision Song Competition, in which there was a concerted effort to keep Israel out of competing, Golan remains focused on her performance of her song called Hurricane in the upcoming semifinals. Israel is ranking number 8 out of 37 competing countries and has taken home the gold 4 times from the Eurovision Song Competition since its participation, which began in 1973 and has gone on continuously. Golan had to change her song she initially submitted because it was deemed too politically charged. And too politically charged because it was an homage and a reference to Israel's October 7th massacre of the Jewish people. And that's what her song that she chose to submit was about. And the song was rejected. Well, we here from the Israel Daily News podcast have to say to you, Eden Golan, kol hakavod, for skipping what was supposed to be a fun opening gala for you and remembering your Jewish heritage and knowing that sometimes when you're a Jew, you can't do the fun stuff. You've got to do the hard stuff instead because your community, your people, and your ancestors are calling on you. Kol hakavod. All right. Well, that is it for today's show. Today is Monday, May 6th, 2024. Tel Aviv has a low of 18 degrees Celsius and a high of 23 degrees. That's 64 degrees Fahrenheit for the low, going up to 74 degrees for the high. Subscribe to the Israel Daily News Podcast on Spotify or Apple Podcasts or wherever you're hearing it from. We are everywhere. Don't forget to sign up to our Israel Weekly News Wrap. It's a newsletter with the top five stories coming out of Israel from throughout the week, and of course, with a personal note from me at the top. You can sign up for that at israeldailynews.org. A big thank you goes out to our social media director, Michelle Milner. I'm going to send you off now with a song called Eli Eli, sung in Hebrew by Nicole Raviv and in English by Ada Pasternak, with a violin solo by Ada Pasternak and a piano done by Itamar Gov-Ari. Eli Eli means my God, and it's also a popular name in Hebrew. It's a poem that was written in Hebrew in 1942 by the Hungarian Jewish World War II resistance fighter Hannah Sines, which Israeli composer David Zahavi put to music in 1945, just 3 years later. Sines wrote the poem from Kibbutz Sdot Yam, which is near the ancient port town of Caesarea here in Israel. I hope you enjoy this song and connect to the meaning of the day. Just because you are not here in Israel does not mean that you cannot commemorate Yom HaShoah. And if you have not done so, I encourage you to say out loud or converse with someone about a relative, a friend, or someone you know who died in the Holocaust. Let's keep their names alive. Have a great and productive day and an excellent week. Shavua Tov, everyone.
Eli.
Shall have my